Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, and welcome to Time to Lean, the podcast where you air your dirty laundry and we help you clean up your shit. I'm Crystal Britt.
And I'm Laura Danger. Think of us as your household secret weapon, taking your questions and voicemails to navigate the wild world of gender norms and household dynamics.
We dive headfirst into the nitty-gritty of how broader social issues impact our everyday lives.
So don't be shy. Send us your dirty laundry.
And we'll help you clean up your shit.
This is Time to Lean.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Time to Lean. I'm Crystal. This is Laura. Really quickly, just at the top of the show, want to talk a little bit about a review that we got, some feedback. One of our reviews that I'm just going to paraphrase, was like, this is a really good podcast, but as soon as they start talking about being neurodivergent, I stop listening because I'm not neurodivergent. So this would be a really good podcast. It brought down our rating, which... whatever, everybody's allowed to have their own opinion. Laura and I are both neurodivergent. So it's really difficult to not speak toward that part of our lives and that integrated identity with how we, one, experience the world as late diagnosed millennial people socialized as women. Like this, it's a really integrated part. It's also a lot of the feedback and of the emails that we get from you guys and the DMs are related to how can I hold space for my ADHD partner while also holding them accountable for not doing what they're supposed to be doing because I'm neurotypical or I'm also neurodivergent and I'm drowning. Like, mm-hmm. How can I balance that? So, the podcast is real neurodivergent heavy. I would say sorry, but I'm not. So how are you doing, Laura?
I'm fine. I think it's really important. Thank you for mentioning that. And also, I think what's really important about the way that we talk about it is the fact that everybody has different brains and ways of doing things. And I mean, the disability justice movement is very clear and explicit about this, but like our society would do better if we were just accommodating to all of our unique needs. Yep. And knowing and talking about neurodivergence and talking about disability and the way it shows up in our lives and social expectations and all of that is a way of kind of blowing up the standard.
Yeah.
And just absolutely. Like making room for differences. And so I just, you know, what's so funny is I've heard men, I don't know if this was man who wrote that review, but I've heard men say things like, I don't really like women's lit. I don't really relate to the characters. It's mm-hmm. like, so women who have read men's lit for everything all the time, constantly. Like, is it, we can't relate? Like,
yep.
People of color who have to study old white men.
Yep.
I just can't relate. Sorry.
Toward that point, why would I read or listen to anyone but other white women?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the person that I'm learning the most from right now is Alice Wong. Wrote The Future is Disabled and Disability Visibility and has a new book on disability and intimacy coming out, I think either like next week or the beginning of April. Why read that? I'm not physically disabled. I'm not in a wheelchair like they are. And I'm not, you know, it's like, so anyway, I just throw that out there. We talk about neurodivergence because one, that's how we experience the world. But also that is how a lot of our listeners, like it intersects and affects a lot of areas of our lives, if not us and our partners, our children, the way we mm-hmm. the way we parent, the way we move in the world. So that will not change. That you don't have to listen if you don't want to listen. That's fine.
I don't think they're going to hear this. If you did, thanks for sticking around.
Truly. There might be something that's worth hearing. If you stick around and listen for a while, you might change your mind. And we're good mm-hmm. with that too. Also, if you leave reviews, that's very, it's truly very helpful for us, irregardless of whatever review you want to leave. It really helps people find us on the charts. We would clearly prefer high reviews, but it's totally up to you.
Yeah. Totally, we also have, we have gotten feedback before, like via email, of things that we could do better or like things that haven't worked. And that's really helpful. So thanks.
Yeah, we use that. It. We look at all of it and we use it.
But okay. Be nice.
But be nice, positive feedback only. That's only, just how we roll.
I'm open to criticism, but also only compliments. No, no, for real.
Only nice criticisms that are compliments. That's the only one I'm open to. We both suffer from rejection sensitive dysphoria as an offshoot symptom of the neurodivergence. Handle with kid gloves only. Thank you. Oh my God. It's so good. Being a person. Also, we're sorry there wasn't an episode last week, you guys. Laura and I have had the craziest fucking personal lives the last 3 weeks. So we appreciate you. Nobody in our DMs being like, where the fuck's your episode? We appreciate you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for that. We would have cried. So, okay. I have this email that I want to read, that I want to talk about because I thought it was very relatable. And I also love when we get input from international to us listeners. So it says, hi, Laura and Crystal. Love your podcast and the thoughtful content you share. Here's my question. If you're a woman in a cishet relationship doing the majority of the cognitive and emotional labor, but your husband is neurodivergent, what do you do? What if you're a woman in a cishet relationship doing the majority of the cognitive and emotional labor, but your husband is neurodivergent? For years, we had a typical oblivious gender labor gap, but over the past year or so, we have been working hard to fix this. My husband is 100% on board with feminism, has educated himself with literature, and we have been attending therapy together for 7 years. All this to say, we have laid solid groundwork for communication and mutual respect. We talk often about the imbalance, and he has tried to take ownership of a lot more tasks. However, he is neurodivergent and struggles a lot, all caps, with focus. He will often have the best intentions, but get distracted and cannot complete basic tasks without reminders. We are in the process of getting him into an ADHD clinic, and in parentheses, which is the process for getting treated in Canada, but the wait is potentially years. I really want to be patient and empathetic with his personal health journey, but I am really struggling. When he fails to follow through with tasks, I am constantly oscillating between one, being understanding and telling myself that it's his brain, and two, saying, oh my God, do better, and telling myself that he doesn't get a pass to being a full partner just because he's a man. He is genuinely contrite and super apologetic when he messes up, and I feel like a bad person for getting angry, but it keeps happening. Any thoughts or advice on how to manage this? I would love your initial thoughts.
I think that's really, there are so many parts of this that are really tricky for me. I was just thinking about this recently because I didn't get an ADHD diagnosis until, I guess it's been like 2 or 3 years now. And I didn't get medicated. I think I've been medicated for like a year and a half. I notice a significant difference in my functioning, my daily functioning, when I am medicated and when I am not. And it's like shocking and really frustrating that I went so long without being medicated or having access to that resource. And it's frustrating when I don't have medication. And I do think like no one in my family would say it outright, but frustrating for them. And like in general, I know that there are things that I do that are bothersome. Like this morning, I felt all week, my husband is much quicker and his just like general demeanor gets the kids out the door quicker. And it can, he's nice about it, but I think it drives him a little bananas that I take twice as long. And I get the kids up and I grab the cat and I like pet the cat. I'm like, morning, meow, meow. And I'll like pretend the cat's doing a voice.
You're my oldest daughter. And I'm like, I have combined type. So my shit is like part trauma from childhood and part, cause I always feel like I'm going to get in trouble. Like move faster. You're going to get in trouble. And I'm like, oh no, I'm the grown up. Relatable.
Yeah. And that's like part of maybe my unmasking thing, my unlearning thing is I just like take my time and I'm like, why? That's also a big part of my brain. Why? Tell me why. I need to go faster. Why? Why don't I could just wake up a little bit earlier. Like, that's a way around it. Yeah. But so I know that there's things that I do that are annoying and they're truly out of my control. Genuinely, it doesn't matter how hard I try. There will be things that I'm incapable of. And so that's annoying. And I think that I have to like work with that in certain ways and should probably think that through a little bit more. Like, I've talked about this before, but I leave the toothpaste out. It's not a problem because the toothpaste is out of place. Like, who cares, truly?
Right.
But what's annoying is that it's the same brand and color as the kids' toothpaste. And so
sorry, they'll I forgot like, about this. Yeah.
They'll use it and then they'll be like, ah, what's the
oh, my spicy. Tongue.
It's spicy. Why is it spicy?
So that's annoying. And what I've done is I try really hard to put it back where it belongs so that it's out of the way and it's not a mix up, or it reduces the chance of a mix up. But I also wrap it with green tape so that the kids know that the one that's green is mine and not theirs. So there's like little things that I do, and I didn't always do this. This is what I'm getting at. I, for a long time, had internalized that the issues that came up from my ADHD were personal failures, and I needed to try harder.
Yeah.
And I like spent years of my life trying harder to do things that I was incapable of.
Yep.
Instead of working with my brain and being like, I am not capable of doing this thing. I'm not going to give up on it. Some things I'm going to give up on, but that's acceptance. That's different.
That's different.
And then other things I'm going to try to get creative on. And I think that has been – like, this is not something I'm flawless at by any means. This is something I'm working on.
And I think it's an iterative process for life. Like, once you get that diagnosis, I don't think it's ever a one and done, like, to your point. I think that's – it's a, like you said, unmasking process and unlearning process and figuring out, like, cool, is this something that I am actually fully incapable of doing? How much does it disrupt the family if I don't follow through on it? So would it be better delegated to my partner? Or is my partner not open to being that delegated to, and they're fine with the level of fallout if I forget? You know what I mean? It's like – nothing's ever going to be a so it's figuring out what works for you.
Yeah, what was your take on that?
I think that this is a super not only just like relatable, but I think this is a very like very normal place for, and I don't know if this partner's if the writer, the wife in this case, is neurotypical or neurodivergent. I would assume neurotypical. I get this frustration because I am the husband in this situation. I also get the feeling of, I think what you touched on is a really interesting point, because that internal monologue of like, I'm doing it wrong, I'm doing it wrong, I'm doing it wrong. And like, especially for late diagnosed women, I feel like it's always, or like people socialized as women who are late diagnosed, I feel like it's the assumption of like, oh, well, I was just head in the clouds, or I was just ditzy, or I was just and I'm using those because typically we see a lot more incidents of inattentive ADHD with girls. And so when you're younger, you do, especially in that situation, you do internalize, oh, I just get distracted and that's bad. Because being focused is good. I just must be lazy because I'm not trying hard enough. Even as a therapist who specializes in this, like I take CEs on executive functioning and ADHD. And I was listening to one this morning, and she was saying that people with ADHD, it's not that they're not trying hard. They're actually trying very hard. They just can't the shit can't connect. It doesn't connect. And if it does connect, it can't be sustained because of the, like, there's no longevity to it because of the way our brain works. So I understand the frustration of, oh my God, like, why can't you just do this? I think step one has to be like extrapolating the moral failure of, hey, like, how hard is it for you to like follow through on this task versus, hey, this activity really seems to be something that you're struggling with. How can we work together? Let's come up with a plan. What works? Like she says in here, he can't complete basic tasks without reminders. That makes sense, right? Like it sounds like there's some inattentive symptoms happening there. He gets distracted and can't complete it without reminders. Neither can I, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have to sit down. I've learned that it is not everybody's experience to have to sit down at the beginning of a day and go, okay, what are my exact have to's that if they do not get done, there's going to be a major consequence immediately. Because if I don't do that, I will forget that it's Friday and I have to pick my kids up early because it's early release. Do you know what I mean? Like I had a bunch of shit that was off this week. So in my head, it's not even Friday. That also contributes. You know what I mean? So it's like, I get, but without any context or without any, right? Like if I forget to pick my kids up or I'm very late picking my kids up, everybody seeing me is like, Jesus Christ, like how hard is it for a mom to remember to pick her kids up? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it's also that, like, I think first extrapolating that moral, because it's ingrained. It's not like you choose to be like, that's what society tells us. Like, well, if you can't do it, you should just, especially American society, if you can't, or Western society, I guess, if you can't, why can't you do it? Just like figure it out.
Yeah. We were talking about enabling versus supporting. And I think what's really tricky there is like, I think there's resentment because the assumption is that you're like someone else is going to pick up the slack for you.
Yep.
And I think that is what's maybe frustrating, like in my partnership, where if I drop the ball, like, you know, I didn't make lunch. Actually, that's okay. Here's one thing that like fair play mm-hmm. probably has been really good at communicating is like, if there's a problem, to explicitly confront it is great.
Yep.
And that's the sort of thing where like he and I keep tripping over each other about like who's going to handle making lunches. Mm-hmm. And I hate making lunches. I hate it. And he comes home at 7 p.m. and it's bedtime and he doesn't want to make lunches either. But like I'm feeding the kids and doing homework with them until he gets home at 7. So I don't want to do it either. Neither of us want to do it. So in the morning, if either of us has to do it, it's this frustration of, oh, you're just going to assume?
Yeah.
Like you just didn't do it. And we're both feeling that.
Yes. Yep.
But that happens often, I think, with me, him in certain ways, me in certain ways. But mine is in a lot of ways related to the ADHD. Like, mm-hmm. I forgot a thing. I didn't do a thing. I was slow with the thing. I got distracted. Right. I put it down.
Right.
And I think I've said this before. I notice it with my kids. My kid will be like, Mom, can you get me a juice? I'll be like, yep. And then I will go into the kitchen and 15 minutes will go by. And I'm like, and she'll go, did you get my juice? I'm like, oh my God, no, I didn't.
Yep.
And she's not being demanding. She's not being rude, but it is probably frustrating to her. And I get this like, dude, get your own damn juice.
Yes. So, yep.
So it creates tension. And you know what? I think in some ways I got to take more responsibility for that and like, get the juice, get the juice, get the juice until I mm-hmm. get the juice in my head. Mm-hmm. Like I say it out loud to myself. And my family needs to give me a little grace.
Yeah, right. Like I love that it's a both and, right? That it's like an understanding of how someone's brain works. And I think an understanding of how someone's brain works and I don't know, like I'm wondering if like in a partnership or in a family is part of it being able to see, extending that understanding part of being able to see the effort from the person who's struggling or like a clear, like you said, to your point, the clear communication that you get through fair play, is it the explicit communication of actually, I'm really struggling with that and I need ideas. Yeah. Do you have ideas? Could you also help look like, can we sit down and like Google this together? I think mm-hmm. also getting like for this partner, but also for anybody who has a partner who has ADHD, I think finding a book that explains explicitly what ADHD is or following an account by a psychologist or a licensed professional that explains what ADHD is
will give you a better understanding of like how their brain works. Cause I think our generation also heard ADD and ADHD in that context of like, well, ADHD belongs to little boys who can't sit still and don't care to pay attention. So then you have this in your head that it's like, well, it's people just who just like can't pay attention, like don't actually care enough to try to pay attention. It's like, no, it's a developmental disorder. That's a developmental disorder. And also understanding that people can have ADHD and be extremely skilled in another area. They can be gifted even in another area, creatively, emotionally, like gross motor skills. That's called twice exceptional when you suffer from a learning disability or a developmental disability, and you also excel way beyond in another skill. It's called twice exceptional. And so it's not also mutually exclusive. If you have ADHD, it's not that you're going to struggle with, they may seem very competent in other areas and not, and they may appear to not suffer from ADHD in those areas. Those are actually unrelated.
Yeah. Yeah. You make a good point about, you made a good point earlier. Like how important is this thing that it gets done? Like, and I think that's where gendered expectations plays a major role here. And I find that like something that I've had to unpack with myself and just like be really aware of when we have conversations around standards. Because when I clean the bathroom, I look around the edge of the bathroom floor and I notice like there's a tiny little, like the baseboards, you know, and I notice the baseboards and when they get dusty. And I don't think my husband has ever felt judged or as if that's important. And so that's very low priority for him, so much so that he might not even notice that it's a thing. And for me, I have to be realistic about it. And I have to be like, okay, that actually is something that's important to me because I think it reflects that our home, like it makes me feel unsafe as if there is like the bathroom is not clean. And that makes me feel like unhygienic. And when something is unhygienic like that in a space that needs to be clean, I feel like it feels dangerous to me. He doesn't know that.
Right.
So I have to be like, and then it's up to me to be like, is this something, and this is where my ADHD has been interesting. Once in a while, I will deep clean. I will put headphones in and just like hyper-focus the hell through cleaning everything because it feels really good. Tons of dopamine going. And he knows it's important to me. But like it just – I feel like it all boils down to like building a trusting relationship where you're both trying.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah. Hold on. At what point does it get where it's like he's trying and it's not – it's still too much for me. Like it still has a massive cost. I'm tired. I'm constantly picking up after him. I like this is costing us financially. And he's not picking up the kids on time and he needs all these reminders and he genuinely needs it and it's really overwhelming.
And in this scenario, the other partner is like actually trying. At that point, I would seriously consider like an additional like neuropsych workup or a psychiatric like checkup to figure out like what is going on. Like if we're trying and we can't, like our working memory is so bad. Like at that point, I would go back to like biological causes. Like, are we okay? Like, are we not? I would start there. And then that's a really good question. I mean, I think that it goes back to what we talked about in an earlier episode about like your like level, what is it? Permanent level of tolerable happiness. What is it?
Tolerable level of permanent unhappiness.
Unhappiness. Yes. So I would like figure, I would do like, I personally would do a serious reevaluation of that. Of like, is that something that I want to continue to engage in? Because the other thing that I think that we kind of you alluded to a little bit earlier is that then you either get burnt out or you start to get into a dynamic of enabling. And that's really difficult to break also.
Yeah. That's what's so tricky about enabling is or I guess like maybe codependency or overfunctioning or any of that mm-hmm. is like my husband this morning is running downstairs and doing the lunches and being like, hey, are you coming? Hey, are you coming? And trying to be really patient because if I don't hurry up, then the kids mm-hmm. will be late for school and he will be late for work. And he is maybe protecting me or enabling me by overcompensating, but he's doing it not necessarily to protect me from negative consequences, but the children and everybody. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. when you are a partner, I just like want to acknowledge how complex of a situation this is when patriarchy mm-hmm. comes into play, because socially we are expected as women or as anybody who has internalized that it is their job to make sure everyone's comfortable, but mm-hmm. also the external expectation from society is if you're perceived as a woman, you are also perceived to be responsible for this.
Right.
Tons of pressure.
Yeah.
And so it's like just letting it fall flat, just mm-hmm. letting it be bad or not mm-hmm. sufficient. At what point do you catch the blame? Does a woman catch the blame for being negligent even when the man is the one doing the negligent activity?
Right.
It still falls on her. And even if other people aren't blaming you, or even if he's really apologetic, so sorry, I didn't see it, I didn't know it, I should have set an alarm, your family's still paying the price and you're feeling guilty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, like you had said, like all of the factors that go in with like having dirty baseboards in a bathroom, I think those are important things to express to a partner. Like I told Ben that a couple of weeks ago because we were going to be late for a soccer game for one of our kids. And he was like, we're going to be late. It's not a big deal. And I was like, here's the thing. I don't care how much unpacking we've done inside the house. When we show up to that game, I would rather die than get out of the car because it doesn't matter. They look at the mom and go, why were you late? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, which again is the thing of like, I can only control what, I can only control what I can control. I can't control how other people perceive me and how they understand me. Right. How other people feel doesn't really matter. Right. Yes. But also it's an important factor in, I worry I'm going to get judged. And like, then it becomes a cycle that I run in my head and I ruminate on. So expressing that to my partner is, and he was like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that you felt that way or that went around. So like, okay, cool. Like we're going to get up a half hour earlier on Saturday mornings because then we're not going to be late. Mm-hmm. Like and we're going to accommodate it that way because it just takes how long it takes to get our family out the door. But it is like all of those external pressures that have been internalized of like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who dropped the ball. If it's related to caregiving in a cishet relationship, you show up, the woman's going to catch the shit about it.
Yeah. It's, you know what? It's so funny you say that. And in reference to what happened in our household this morning, I also, my big kid is, I don't know what the heck she's doing at every day at recess. She's getting mud on the front of her coat and her sleeves. She comes home with dirt, like dirt, as if she has had her entire chest like sliding.
I was going to say, she's slip and sliding.
Yes. And she has this like, it's like a light pink coat. It's almost white. I don't know what I was thinking, but I've washed it. And okay, so if you live in a cold climate, honestly, it's not that common to like, you don't wash your coat the same amount of times that you wash any other piece of clothing. No.
Yeah.
So I have washed this coat, I don't know, every other week since the beginning of winter, which is just wild. So I bring her home last night and she goes, Mom, look. And she puts her fingers in the whole seam of her coat is ripped open. There's a hole in it. Oh my God.
In a winter coat.
Yes. And it's filthy. And so I was like, okay, when I get home, I will wash it. And it was my night to go out. So I was like, ah, whatever.
God damn it.
So I washed it. And then Jack is like doing a whole bunch of stuff this morning and I am taking my damn time. Just like petting the cats, brushing my teeth. And then I sat down. He had fed them breakfast. He had done all this stuff. I sit down with the coat and I get out a needle and thread. And I just, I imagine, he didn't say a word, but I imagine his body, I didn't even look at him. I'm sure he was like, what the fuck are you doing?
What the fuck?
We have to get out the door and you're sewing? What are you doing?
Needle and thread. The needle and thread is the best part.
I was threading the needle as he came in and it's 7:45 and we have to be at school by 8. I'm just like.
No, just but you know quick, what he didn't. It's a whip stitch. I got it. Don't worry about it.
I had previously, months ago, the same exact thing. I'm telling you, this has happened all winter. I had previously explained to him how embarrassing it was for me that I took her to a dentist appointment and her coat was filthy and the dentist didn't say anything to us. But I know people are looking at me being like, your right. kid is not well taken care of.
Right.
So I appreciated that he just like didn't say anything because at this point he understands that there are certain things that like it was worth five. It only took 2 minutes. It was really simple.
Right.
We got out the door on time. I estimated time okay. But he knew it was important.
Right. Right. And in that moment, too, probably weighed, okay, what is the cost? Like running a quick cost, cost-benefit analysis of like, okay, if I bring this up now, I don't want to start a fight. Don't want this to be a thing. How long is this realistically going to take? I'm panicked. Okay, like I'm just going to – like maybe he was like, cool, if it's not over in 3 minutes, then maybe I say something. You know what I mean? And then it was done. So it was like, okay, great. Like I think figuring out how to – like what the whole time you were just telling that story, I was thinking about a same. We went to – I took my kids' troop to – Universal Studios for like a last trip. We're not doing scouts anymore. And we took my middle went also with one of our family friends. And when we all joined back up together at the end, she was like, your kid tells me that, and we know each other very well, has a hole in his shoe and that, his dad won't let him get new shoes unless he saves money for a shoe. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I go, listen, he wears the same hole in his shoes because he twirls around on the ball of his foot. It's the same hole. I didn't even know. Hello, like middle kid, please stop wearing your shoes if they have a hole in them. Hello. Because I'm like, stop telling people we make you wear holy shoes. That's not the case. That's not what happened. It's because it is the social pressure of I'm not a bad mom. You know what I mean? You just like want to wear a sign that's like, I'm not a bad mom. It's like the thing of like when your kid will go out without a jacket, refuses to wear a jacket and you like just like want to hold the jacket behind them the whole time. It's like, no, I swear to God, I tried all morning. This is as good as it got. We're just out the door is a miracle. You know, like it's so hard. And so I think realistically grappling with like your own expectations of yourself and the social pressures that you're experiencing, talking with your partner about like how that affects you. And then also talking about like, what are the make and break standards that we have in the household that are like either that make us feel unsafe, that make us feel right, like strip it down to the bare bones and see if that's more manageable. And if like making it smaller, breaking it down into smaller pieces might make it a little bit easier for your partner to like fulfill on.
Yeah, I think that's been, you and I have talked about that before. I think that can be really clarifying, like with the toothpaste, where it's like, okay, you're not upset at me for leaving the toothpaste out on the sink. Like maybe ideally it would go away because it looks neat and tidy and that does matter to you or to both of us. But when, like you said, like the bare bones standard, and it's not, I don't like the terms like the bare minimum. I think what you're talking about is like aligned with our needs.
Yes.
So, and I think that's where it's like really tricky and you truly need someone who's going to be good faith with you. Because it's like easily, and I did, there are things that I have brushed off consistently, point where Jack and I are just like not going to agree. But it stresses, there's certain parts of it stress him out. And part of it we found out is that he doesn't want to be late to, they go in a different door than the main door. He doesn't mm-hmm. know what to, neither of us know what to do if they're late.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the yeah. idea of like having to go all the way around the building and bring them in and sign them in and find the classroom, and they've, yep. she's never been late ever.
Right. Right.
And so I was like, if I ever make them late, I 100% will take responsibility and I will go figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Just I'll knowing take the lead that, on that.
Yeah.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
And so knowing like what are the bare, like you said, what are the bare bones? I love that. What are the mm-hmm. bare bones? Like, what is the structure that our family needs to keep to have our needs met?
And what are your needs, right? Like,
yeah.
are the needs safety? Is the need tranquility? Is it peace? Is it like, what is the need that, what's the value that centers the house and like what you're doing, right? Like what, if your family had a mission statement, what would be the value that the mission statement was based around? Okay, so just take that value and now decide, what else do I want to do? Like, what are the bare bones structures of like what we have to get, especially if you have kids, right? Okay, so getting ready for school in the morning. If the purpose is safety, what does that look like? Like if you have food allergies, maybe that looks like having food set out. If you have, you know, mixed food allergies or whatever, maybe that looks like having that food set out or, you know, prepackaged for that kid and lunch made the night before. You know what I mean? Like you just do it for you, not because of what the expect. I think for a partner who is struggling to get the other partner to like motivate or follow through, I think the priority needs to also be like self-reflection of like, what am I trying to get done? What's mm-hmm. driving me also, right? There's frustration here. What is my frustration? I want to get clarity on my frustration so that you can clearly articulate, hey, actually, when you do this, it's not because I don't get mad at you because I think you're lazy. I get mad at you because my feelings get hurt because I feel like I'm unimportant, or I feel yeah. like the family doesn't matter to you, or I feel like the assumption, because I've started saying those things out loud to my kids, like, hey, when you leave this here, it reminds me of a time when I wasn't allowed to have things that belonged only to me. So it makes me frustrated when you use my stuff. So could we come up with do you want me to buy you one of your own? Do you want to save up your money for one of your own and problem solve from there? So that they also have a context of like, my mom is human, and it's not that just she's yelling at me. Cause I think that also like not letting your kids know what you and your partner struggle with and not being honest about that, I feel like that causes a lot of undue trauma. I've had a lot of people in my comments who had parents who insisted on things being done a right way, and it seemed arbitrary. And then later on, it's like, oh no, my parent had ADHD, or my parent was autistic, or my parent had OCD. And actually that was really important. It's like, just be honest, age appropriate, and like calibrate, but be honest.
Yeah. I think that's that's such a great point. And I think that's really hard when it comes to like, yeah, if your partner is incapable of doing something, I think that realism is really important. Mm-hmm. And like, if it is something that really matters, like the kids need to be picked up on time every day. And if yep. I can't be available and you can't do it consistently, then do we need to talk about a neighbor about carpooling?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that are really important. And it's not that I'm mad at you for your capabilities.
Yep.
I'm not.
Right. Right.
It's that we have needs that are going unmet. And when there is a promise and a no follow through,
right,
it feels really bad.
Yep. Yep.
So like, and that's where it's like, yeah, self-reflection and good faith. This is another symptom of our society not giving us enough support or resources or community, because you shouldn't have to only have each yeah. other.
Right. That was the other thing where I can't remember if you and I were talking about this or if one of my sisters and I were talking about this lately, but it's the thing of like, no, this shit is bonkers to navigate. Like the idea that two people should navigate this shit on their own. And then you add in the fact in some partnerships that like one partner suffers from either mental illness or, you know, developmental disability like ADHD. It's almost a liability to self-discover at that point, because then you either lean into the self-discovery and then you're like, oh, Sorry, I was way over functioning. I found out I've actually been pushing myself way too fucking hard and I can't push myself anymore. And then it's like, then you have to strip down to like the barest of bones because two people are not supposed to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Right. We rely very, we, when I got the stomach flu over the weekend, Ben handled the kids, but I'm left to my own devices to care for myself. Right. And so you sent us stuff. My sister sent us stuff. We had friends DoorDash dinner to us, right? Like it, we couldn't do it on our own. Mm-hmm. It's not something where everybody can be taken care of, and it's not supposed to be that way. The infrastructure is non-existent, mm-hmm. completely non-existent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You should be able to, I think we were talking about that. It's like, if there were more adults, everyone could half-ass it. Yeah. Be fine.
Yes. And feel good about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's like right now, I think you and I were both talking about this, like with just stress, with like mm-hmm. chaos. And I'm snappy. I am not the type of patient parent I want to be. And I would not feel this way if I wasn't feeling under pressure, or if I feel like I could have more breaks or,
yep.
And I'm, yeah. So it's hard. Yep. And like, it doesn't mean that it's an excuse. It's worth acknowledging.
Yes, it's worth acknowledging and validating because it provides that normalization of, yeah, this is not normal. Even though we are all continuing to like move forward as a society as though it's normal, this is not normal. Not normal at all.
Well, thank you for sharing that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. I really liked it. Thank you guys for joining us. We are so thankful that you guys are here. Subscribe, like, review. Any of the feedback is always welcome. And we will see you next time.
Bye. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Time to Lean. Your questions and stories are what keep us going. So keep those voicemails and messages coming.
Until our next episode, remember that you can always find us on social media and of course in your podcast feed. You can also subscribe for $5 a month on Spotify for uninterrupted episodes and bonus content.
We're so grateful for your support. See you next time.